we believe that financial inclusion is the key for the growth of economy. This is where my heart is, because I think it will not only serve our interest as MasterCard, and it will also bring inclusive growth for smaller micro merchants, leading to very fast growth in the economy after COVID.
Welcome to the Payments Powerhouses podcast, where we discuss current trends with the movers and shakers in the fintech industry, brought to you by 2C2P, Asia's leading payment solutions provider.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Payments Powerhouses. I'm Suhan, your host for today. And joining us in today's episode, we have Hamid Farid, who is the VP Head of Market Development at MasterCard. Hamid has an extensive career as an entrepreneur, executive, and management consultant, working across fintech, payments, consumer banking, and e-commerce sectors. To start, I'd like to ask you about the evolution of your career. Before taking up your present position at MasterCard Indonesia, you have built career in banking and finance like United Bank Limited, Emirates Islamic Bank, and Western Union Financial Services. I'm sure the listener would love to understand a little bit more about your background, how it leads to your current role.
Sure. I'll be pleased to share that. To start off, like, I have always been passionate about the payments industry. That's why my entire career span of 20 years is spread across multiple or diversified positions. Earlier days of my career, I was with IBM as a management trainee, but that was very early part of my career in the e-commerce division. But later on, if I move forward more towards the executive roles, I have been head of cards for two banks, one in Pakistan and one in UAE, UBL and Emirates NBD Bank. Head of cards position is very focused on consumers, and that gives you a very strong understanding of technology and how payments are made. The times when I was head of cards, you know, we were still living on Magstripe world and had started shifting towards the chip. So it was evolution I actually witnessed. And then working in different markets, especially Dubai or UAE, you know, I got a exposure of different types of consumers, because we don't have one country representatives there, which teaches you a lot of things about consumers, their behavior, their interest. Travel happens to be one of the important ones. Moving from that, I joined senior role in Western Union as regional director, which is a country head position for Pakistan and Afghanistan. Western Union is a company which is a leader in real-time payments and cross-border payments. It was a different flavor moving from the card rails to the real-time payments, which is account-to-account transfers and cash-to-account transfers and stuff like that. And, you know, that gives you understanding of diaspora also, because you're not talking about one country, you're talking about population in one country sending money to population in another country. So you need to understand what the needs are for the recipients of that particular type of payment, whether it's business payment or it's remittance or any other form of fund transfer. I spent a good 6 years in that role before moving, fulfilling my old passion or founding a startup. And I left that job, and then I started my own e-commerce initiative based out of Canada, serving the customers in the US. We were actually running around 5 online stores serving different type of customer bases. But the most interesting store, which I would specifically mention, is Rivera Shades, which was actually a new brand of sunglasses. So we actually started from designing to manufacturing to marketing, and especially digital marketing. So you need talking about the website and then the checkout experience and the payment experience and all that. So the e-commerce experience was very useful. It taught me many things about how payments are made, what are the requirements and needs of these small or medium enterprises right now who are coming in the e-commerce space. After that stint, COVID touching us, I decided to sell off my business to my partner, and I moved to MasterCard in the current role.
Thank you for sharing. That's quite an impressive range of experience across markets as well. You mentioned you started your own startup. I'm really curious to understand, like, what motivated you to venture and start your own company? I'm really fascinated with entrepreneurs, and I'd love to hear from your point of view, what was your motivation and what key takeaways you have taken out of that experience?
I always wanted to do this, not just now, even when I started my career right in the beginning, but I never had the courage to do it. You need to be very committed and very determined for something like that. But finally, I did it. Indus Rivera was the name of the company. And then we had online stores. As I mentioned, Rivera Shades was the flagship one. Biggest learning about startup is to manage your burnout rate. Because you have limited resources, you have limited funds, and you don't know when you will break even. So I think that's the biggest learning for any startup, how to manage your resources and stay focused on your prime products. And secondly, I think for a startup, you also need to be well-versed with all aspects of business. Because when you're starting a company, you deal with HR issues, you deal with legal matters, you deal with government policies, which is not in a normal role. So it's a very good learning experience. I'm glad that I did that. It was successful in a way that we reached the break-even point after like almost 4 years. I sort of decided to move on. You know, I was missing my corporate life.
I think that's a very brave thing to do, to start your own business, because I personally wouldn't be able to do that, because for me, I think starting a business is full-time commitment role, right? You got to think about it 24/7. Like you say, you got to manage your own cash flow. And also, in a way, you're ahead of everything, HR, finance, business, and marketing. But that's really cool. So I think bringing back to the present moment, right? So as the VP and head of market development at Mastercard Indonesia, will you be able to share a little bit more in terms of what you do?
My current role is very exciting in the sense that Mastercard, as it was known earlier only as a card company, has now become a very diversified company serving all types of payment solutions and products. So basically, my role is more towards, you know, increasing the footprint of acceptance in Indonesia, creating more touch points for customers and more convenient ways of payments. And at the same time, enabling new use cases, which are not there in the market right now, but they are important because customer demand is there. And then touching new payment flows. Payment flows are different in the modern world because we deal with multi-rails. We talk about card rails, which is normal for MasterCard, but then we have e-commerce and QR rails and bank-to-bank rails and remittance rails. There's a new list of rails which are coming. My objective remains that, you know, we stay relevant in all payment flows which are there and which are upcoming. And while being in that role, I also obviously look after the growth of the core services and revenue, which is our main bread and butter, while developing relationships with companies which are more digital savvy right now in the country and trying to build some kind of mutual business which can benefit both. Most importantly, I would say, you know, my role stays aligned with the government of Indonesia's agenda of cashless economy. I work towards bringing more and more micro enterprises on board for that purpose.
Maybe you can elaborate more about that. Like mentioned, your goals is aligned in terms of what Indonesia is trying to push towards digital payments, right? So maybe you could share, how is MasterCard helping that exactly?
There are multiple things we are doing. We believe that there's a gap of literacy, or you can say the financial literacy or the technological literacy in the general public who are there to do business. So we are rolling out different type of educational programs, and we are also trying to find ways to fund terminals or devices which can be used for any kind of acceptance, which are offline. At the same time, we are also serving those customers who are interested in low-cost online acceptance solutions with our technology. And most importantly, you know, in the modern days, when you talk about digitization, cyber security is very crucial. So we have very vast range of products which we are trying to fit with these small businesses so that they can easily start doing their business without any fear. This is a very broad approach we are taking as, you know, we're moving forward.
And I agree, like, in order to implement any new kinds of payments or to improve, I think security is quite important as well, because you want to lower the barrier to entry for new merchants or new business to take it up. I think further elaborating on Indonesia's payment scene, according to a recent IDC report about how Southeast Asia buys and pays, the card's payment method is one of the more popular ways to pay in Indonesia. The trend for card is set to hold in years to come, but mobile wallet is expected to catch up with cards in 2025. I'm curious to know, why do you think active card usage in Indonesia remains high? But at the same time, do you agree from your observation that in years to come, mobile wallet will become the most dominant method to pay in Indonesia?
I believe that people who have just come out of COVID, you know, they have experienced physical contact is not something they would like to do. They were sitting and making grocery shopping purchases via websites. They were trying to avoid going and visiting banks for any kind of interaction. At the same time, they were making bill payments. All these use cases are relevant for cards. At the moment, we have a very handsome number of debit cards in the market. In total, I think there are 220 million cards which are currently active or at least issued in the market. That size of card base is almost serving the entire population. Card still remains, I would say, the most commonly used form of payment because people are used to it and they find it convenient to make payments. These are the main reasons that growth of cards will stay. And also, we are making a lot of efforts from our end by giving incentives to merchants as well as to customers and giving them more advantageous solutions where they don't have to be technologically savvy. And a normal customer can make payments as well. So offline and online, both are doing well for cards. However, there is a big initiative which is being rolled out by Bank of Indonesia, which is around the QRIS. And that initiative also has tremendously helped digitization of economy in Indonesia, and it's continuing. And we're talking about, you know, almost 15 million merchants who have enrolled in QRIS program. So wallets are more connected with the QRIS network or QRIS rails. That's why, since they are easily available, you don't have to have a particular profile as a customer. Whereas when you apply for a credit card, you need to be providing certain documents. Similarly for accounts, not every Indonesian has a bank account. These are the reasons that people are also adopting the wallets. And I think wallets will remain as one of the prime payment tools as the QRIS has become stronger in the country. I would say the future is very bright for the wallets.
And I think for the benefit of our listeners who are not familiar with the Indonesian landscape as well, could you briefly explain what is QRIS?
As I said, there are multiple types of payment rails. QR rails are those rails where you have a QR code in front of you. Whether you are making a payment at a store or even online, if you see a QR code for payment, you can scan it with a phone. That scan actually allows you to make a direct transfer of payment to the account associated with that QR code. It is also now becoming more advanced that we have dynamic QR codes as well, which allows merchants to produce not just regular QR, but a specific payment-related QR where the amount and everything is part of one code. And then you have also customer-generated codes as well, where instead of the merchant, the customer presents the code and merchant can scan it. So it can be on both sides. Convenience is there because you don't need anything special. Even if you have a printout, which is a regular printout, you can use it for payments. You don't need a terminal or any device which is going to cost the merchant. So it's cheaper, it's easier, convenient, and there's a lot of support from the regulator. So I think this is going to fly well in Indonesia.
I guess I'd love to know from your point of view as well. You mentioned quite a few initiatives Mastercard is driving. Is there any in particular that you're the most excited about?
We have been working on initiatives right from providing education, not only to the banks, but to the merchants, also to the individuals. We have recently rolled out digital first program where banks and their partners can understand how digital form of payments can be popular. Similarly, we have rolled out multiple educational programs for merchants as well as individuals. Most recently, we have been working on a program which is going to target small and micro enterprises. And we believe that financial inclusion is the key for the growth of economy. If we don't do something in that area, we cannot grow exponentially. We have been developing a program where we can not only do micro lending to these small players, giving them very small loans, which will help them to upgrade their store in the form of developing a website or incorporating any other needs which are there, as well as providing them with devices. These devices can either be in the form of Android point of sale terminals. They can be cheaper form of terminals which are without printers. There is also a version which is called SoftPOS, which is the software which sits on your mobile phone and your mobile phone becomes acceptance point. This is a program we have been working on. We are still planning to roll it out as a pilot in the last part of this year, which is Q4, and we are talking to fintechs who can support us in securing those type of micro merchants which are on their platform. This is where my heart is, because I think it will not only serve our interest as a MasterCard, we want acceptance to increase, and it will also bring inclusive growth for smaller micro merchants, leading to very fast growth in the economy after COVID.
Yeah, I think as a result of that, you will see a positive impact to the society as well, right? As you close the gap from a financial inclusion standpoint.
That's correct.
Just to switch gear a little bit, I read somewhere that in March, MasterCard actually launched a biometrics payment method pilot in Brazil, where you can pay with your, I believe, your fingerprint or your face. Will we be expect to see anything here in Asia or Indonesia anytime soon?
This is something very new which is happening, but this is the future also. As we are moving from passwords to biometric verifications across the world, we can see it happening in the social media and other forms. And I think we have also started rolling it out. The idea is that you don't use anything else, but you just use your face recognition as checkout for your payment on any store online. But rolling this out is not easy. We need some development to be done. So I don't think Indonesia will be our next target, because we have some work to do here. However, Middle East is something we are looking forward as the next area where we want to roll it out. Not too long from now, I think we will bring it to Indonesia, as I think this is going to make things easy and convenient for customers.
Hopefully, maybe you'll see it in Singapore first then.
Yes, that's a possibility. Because you look for places where all the infrastructural developments are there. So Singapore has that, definitely.
We have reached the last part of the podcast. But before we wrap up, I think I'm really keen to learn from you, because you have a very diverse background. You work in many different places as well. Just wondering if you have any other passion projects ongoing, or what do you do outside of work?
My passion stays a lot with my work. As I mentioned about this micro-lending and acceptance program, this is where my passion is right now. I'm working on other projects as well, but my closest to heart project is this, and I'm spending more time on it. Other than that, I stay focused learning more about Indonesia, because I'm also new in the country as an expat.
All right, I think with that, we have reached the end of the podcast, but I'd love to thank you for your time, Amit, for coming onto the show. I hope to chat with you in future. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter. To read more about this conversation, go to 2c2p.com/blog.